Asuta produced Mahatattvam, the total material energy. Hiranmayam, the original source for the emanation of varieties of material things. Phew. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Now, Jai indeed. This is an unusual section. It's the instructions to Sanatana Goswami. But it's a little bit unusual for Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's all about the creation of the universe and Mahatats and all that kind of stuff. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read this text and the following one, if that's okay. Just to give some context.
Well, thank you, old chap.
Translation. At a time beyond memory, after agitating the material nature into three qualities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead placed the semen of innumerable living entities within the womb of that material nature. Thus, material nature gave birth to the total material energy, known as the Hiranyamaya Mahatattva, the original symbolic representation of the cosmic manifestation. You only had to understand a couple of those words. Purport. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto. Lord Kapila is explaining to his mother Devahuti the relationship between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and material nature. He is informing her how the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the original cause of the living entities who are conditioned by material nature. Over and above the 28 elements of the material creation is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. Life comes not from matter, but from life itself. As explained in the Vedas, Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam, Katha Upanishad, the Supreme Lord is the original source of life. So, we could start. We'll start with this one. Om Gyanati Mirantasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Milatam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So, the first few words are very interesting. At a time beyond memory. So, the text is saying that all of this happened at a time that's beyond memory or our capacity to understand. These things happen in, it's vast, the time scales we're talking about. But in a sense, this happened before time, because this is how time came into being. So, interesting, that, and time is considered to be eternal because it comes from the Supreme Lord. But time and space constrict everything. So, when we're in a time-bound body, it means that it has a beginning and an end. When we talk about the Supreme Lord, we're talking about something without beginning and without end, which is, so this is a time beyond memory. The hint is, don't try to find any other source than the Supreme Lord. There is no other source. There's no one has a memory that goes back this far. It's just like, there's a joke, how do you make God laugh? Does anyone know how to make God laugh? Tell him your plans. Because our plans are always so absolutely insignificant compared to God's plans. God knows what's going on. It's like a parent with a child. So the child is, the child doesn't know what's going on. So the child asks for something and doesn't see the bigger picture. Like, they're going to have dinner in an hour's time. The child just sees the sweets now. It's just an immediate thing. Sweets, now, satisfaction, sugar, me. Oh. And the parent has to say, no, we won't take them now. We're going to have dinner. No, now. And we're a bit like that. We have plans. Now, if I don't get it, I won't be happy. I'll never be happy. All my opportunity for happiness will be gone. This is all that's going on in our head. Whereas the bigger picture says something completely different. So not getting this thing would actually be the important part. Whereas we don't see the big plan. But, so this is this is like that. When we talk about Krishna, we're talking about something beyond our comprehension. Krishna's beyond our comprehension. To try and understand him, we don't have the capacity to do it. You know, in computer jargon, you have to have a certain amount of RAM, a certain amount of memory. It's interesting that the word is RAM. If you don't have enough RAM, you can't understand Krishna. Kind of like that. So we don't have the RAM, we don't have the memory, we don't have the capacity. Memory is a function of buddhi, intelligence. And we don't have the intelligence to understand the Supreme, because the Supreme's intelligence is so much greater. So when Krishna contemplates something, we have no way of being involved in that contemplation. All we can do is see the manifestation of it. And when we see the manifestation of the material world, it's so incomprehensible to us. You know, we're trying to organize a wedding today. So look at the depth of organization, the amount of people involved, the amount of things, flowers, paraphernalia, food, invitations, tents, chairs, tables. Everything has to be organized and brought to one place. And that's a really big endeavor for us. This is like, you know, a lot of work. Just to keep the temple on the road. I've just been noticing the lovely new cushions. You know, you come and you see these new things, and you know the energy. Energy goes into this. It's not just the energy of the person who makes it. Someone has to choose the material. It has to be material that wears some well. Someone has to make the decision. Someone has to find the money. Someone has to give the money. So much intelligence and energy and effort has to go into just producing the cushions, just to keep this place together. Yet we just look outside, and the field outside is full of living entities called grass. Millions of people out there being organized. Trees, from every acorn, an oak tree grows. From every beech nut, a beech tree grows. Not a different type of tree, a beech tree. And it needs certain conditions, and they're all here. Who organized that? That's highly organized. Way beyond our capacity. We can hardly maintain a couple of cushions. You know, somehow last night, I don't know what happened, I came in at 7 o'clock for the aarti, and there was no aarti. Hriday can't remember there not having been an evening aarti, and then someone explained something about the offering being late or something, and someone obviously couldn't compute. They just ran out of RAM, and they just couldn't get it together to do an aarti. You know, it was just too much. And that happens. So no matter how well organized it is, something goes wrong in our life, some little thing that we expected to happen, and all of a sudden we grind to a halt. Can't function anymore. Well, I'm so glad that doesn't happen to Krishna. Imagine if you woke up one morning and all the trees just weren't there. There was no grass, it was just black and white. You know, Krishna just didn't bother getting up. You know, the devas just doing their nails. Couldn't care anymore. That's why they have their job, because they don't whinge. They don't lament. You know, we lament and we whinge and we get into humps, you know. No, don't talk to me. No. We get upset like little children. We can't take much responsibility, actually. Not to speak of conceive of it. Even if we're given responsibility, it's difficult for us to maintain it. So at a time beyond memory, that those few words put us into our place. You know, at a time when you have no idea, when we have no capacity, no comprehension. And then, kind of nearly unfortunately, this is somewhat relevant to the day of a marriage, when it talks about Supreme Personality placed the semen of innumerable entities into the womb of the material nature. That's what happens. So this example is given. It's a metaphor. It's not that it's real semen or real womb, but it's just a metaphor to show us that this is the birth of creation. This material nature gave birth to the total material energy, the original. And then Prabhupada says, life comes not from matter, but from life itself. The Supreme Lord is the original source of life. This is a very important point. We understand this from, you know, just reading the Gita, 2:11, 2:12, 2:13. These are 2:11 to 30, in actual fact. All these texts talk about the nature of the self being eternal by nature. So, you know, everywhere I go now, I was at a school, I was asked to give a talk, and there was this kid, he was 12 years old, and he put his hand up after my talk, and he said, "Do you believe in evolution?" And it wasn't a humble question. And I said, it's an interesting theory. He said, "It's not a theory, it's a fact." And he was waiting to pounce on me, because he'd had some Christians and Muslims, and he was just asking the same question of everyone who had the label religion on their forehead. And I said, "I think you'll find it's a theory." He said, no, it's a fact. And I said, "When did they prove it? Can you give me a date?" And he said, and he wasn't willing to admit the fact that he didn't have a date. It's not proven in any way. So there's this arrogance has entered into modern science. It's become a religion. And it's become quite an evangelical religion. They're quite convinced that they have the truth. The fact is, we're all looking for truth. The idea of sat, right from the Rig Veda. In fact, sattva, goodness we call it. Actually, the proper pronunciation, translation will be truthness. There will be that pertaining to truth. You lead a life of truth. Truth is you understand what is what. So truth is not honesty in the material sense. It's understanding that I am a servant of the Supreme. There is a Supreme, and I am the servant of the Supreme. That's truth. When you live that kind of life, you're living in truth. So goodness is in that truthness. And this idea of sat is that we're satya, we're all endeavoring for truth. That's an imperative within us. We have no choice but to look for it. When we walk into a room, we're looking for the meaning and the purpose in this. When we read a book, we're looking for the meaning and the purpose. If we don't find it, we're not interested. There has to be meaning and purpose. So every material scientist is looking for truth. He's doing what we all have to do by our nature. And we're looking for truth. We're just looking in a different way in different places. So they're not exclusive. So the scientists are now becoming as exclusivist as some religious people become. So some religious people say, "My way of truth is the only way of truth. There is no other way of truth. You can't understand truth by any other means." But that's not true. Because other people do understand truth by other means. Krishna can help anyone understand truth by any means, because he's God. He can do whatever he likes. So we can't take truth, which is associated with Krishna, and become the arbiters, the masters. We're the ones who give out the understanding in some mystical yet arrogant way. So it's just interesting that, so Prabhupada makes this point, he's made this point so many times, as a challenge to anyone, not just material scientists, but materialists in general. Life doesn't come from matter, but from life itself. If you want to understand truth and life, force, the energy of life, is more true than dead material matter. That we all understand. This thing here, when it disintegrates over years and years, it'll just crumble away and some insects will get in and it'll just become something that nobody wants. No one's going to weep over it. Yet, if one of our friends passes away, the body disintegrates as it does, then we'll be upset because of the person involved. That's just common sense. We all know that. But if we just examine the material circumstance, we just examine the body, and then we say we're going to cure everything, and these simplistic arguments, from this perspective, these are very simplistic. And Prabhupada's point, you have to understand that the Supreme Lord is the original source of life. The Supreme Lord is the original source of everything. And he's taking this text where the Supreme Lord is the original cause of the material energy. So this is what this text is saying. Prabhupada's taking it one step further and saying, but you have to understand the Supreme Lord is the original source of life. Take aside the metaphor of the womb and all that, but actually this is beyond that. Okay. So we'll go on to the next text, and that is, in due course of time, this is the translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by the agency of a further expansion of his personal self, that's the Mahavishnu, placed the seed of the living entity within the womb of material nature. It's kind of saying what we just said. And this is another quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam. This verse tells how the living entities come in contact with material nature. Just as a woman cannot beget children without uniting with a man, material nature cannot beget living entities without being in union with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is a history of how the Absolute Lord becomes the Father of all living entities. In every system of religion, it is accepted that God is the Supreme Father of all living entities. According to Christianity, the Supreme Father, God, provides the living entities with all life's necessities. Therefore they pray, give us this day our daily bread. Any religion that does not accept the Supreme Lord as the Absolute Father is called Kaivata Dharma, or a cheating religion. Such religious systems are rejected in Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharma Prayochita Kaivatotra. Only an atheist does not accept the Omnipotent Supreme Father. If one accepts the Omnipotent Supreme Father, he abides by his orders and becomes a religious person. So, Prabhupada is taking it a step further, helping us understand that he's actually taking what is a Christian understanding and helping us understand that this is one way to see God, and that this is a proper way to see God. There's no problem with this. When we look at God in relation to the material energy, then God is the procreator. So metaphorically, he's the father. And the womb is the material energy. And he says only an atheist does not accept the omnipotent Supreme Father. An atheist and a non-theist. I'm just making a little distinction there. Because Advaitins are non-theists. They're not atheists. They don't deny that there is a God. They just deny the personhood of God. So there is no concept of Father. So they deny that God is the Father, because there is no Father. So if we're all one, then there's no God, and there's no individual. There's no individual on any level. There's no individual God. So it all just merges into this one Supreme Brahman. So the idea of the Father God, or the Supreme Person God, is gone. So Prabhupada doesn't like that idea because it denies Krishna. So it's not atheism, it's non-theism. Just a little subtle distinction that Indian culture has. And it's very interesting in Indian culture that there aren't many atheists, there are more non-theists. Not many people deny spirituality, but they deny personhood. And that, as Prabhupada says here, becomes difficult. It says in every religion it's accepted that God is the Supreme Father of all living entities. Prabhupada's point is, if we don't accept that there is a cause, it puts us in an artificial position. So we can't be ourselves, is his point. We can understand ourselves as Brahman, but we can't understand our personality. And that idea goes back to 2.11 in the Bhagavad Gita, Natuevaham Jatuna Sam Natuam Nimejinadipa. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future will any of us cease to be. So Prabhupada, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, they all look at that text and say, this proves that the person is individual eternally. So there was never a time when Arjuna didn't exist. That means him as an individual exists eternally. When Sankaracharya tries to comment on that verse, he has great difficulty. And he says we shouldn't over-intellectualize this text, which means he can't explain it, because he proceeds to over-intellectualize most other texts. So it's a very weak argument. He can't respond to that. And the Gita isn't an insignificant text. It's one of the three texts that any Acharya has to comment on. You have to comment on the Vedanta Sutra, the Upanishads, and the Bhagavad Gita. So it can't be ignored. And they have to comment on that particular text. And that clearly states that we are eternal individuals. So Prabhupada takes every opportunity to help us understand this point, this idea of personhood. We are people eternally. And in that sense, it's important for two reasons. One, philosophically, it's important to understand who we are, but it's also important from a spiritual perspective, because the whole concept of bhakti is inherent in that text. The philosophical basis of bhakti is in that text. It means that Krishna didn't create Arjuna. He didn't create us. We're not created by God. We are eternal by nature. No one created us. And that's a very important point, because it means we can love God. We don't have to love him. We have a choice. So that choice comes from us. That's all we have, is that choice. We don't have anything else to offer. It's just, if we're eternally individuals, we can choose to love or not love. That's all we can do. We don't have much else to say. So if we say that God is the creator or some such thing, we take away that choice. Philosophically, it's a very poor position, and it leaves us no capacity to develop our love for God. We have to love him because he created us. So we're duty bound. You can't dutifully love someone. I'm sure Kumari and Vishwambar, they're not loving each other because someone told them, or because they have to. There's some imperative. You know, I have to marry the son of the temple president of Radhadesh. It is my duty. No one said that. This is their own relationship. Every Hollywood and Bollywood film says this. It must be true. So why does Prabhupada, you know, keep on going on and on and on about this? Because if he doesn't go on about this, we won't understand what love is. We'll never experience love. We'll never be in a position to be ourselves, to be servants in relation to Krishna. That's who we are. And if we don't understand that point, we can't move forward in spiritual life. We just get stuck in this idea of the difference between matter and spirit. Great. That's the basic transcendental realization. But we can't move forward. We can't move on with it. That in itself isn't enough to bring us satisfaction. Yayatma supraseedati. The beginning of the Bhagavatam says, Savaipum samparo dharmo yato bhaktirad hokshaje ahoitakiya pratiyata yayatma supraseedati. So it's the definition of religion, a brilliant definition. The supreme occupation for all humanity is that by which one can attain loving devotional service unto the supreme transcendent Lord. Such service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted, yayatma supraseedati, to completely satisfy the self. That last sentence is very interesting, because the rest of it is very pious, very religious, lovely. The service to the supreme transcendent Lord, what it doesn't address is what's in it for me. And frankly, if there isn't something in it for us, we're not going to do it. We're very simple. We're very simple creatures. Yayatma supraseedati, the self will be completely satisfied. That's what's in it for us. So it's the ultimate selfish declaration. But if you have to understand who the self is to be truly selfish, if we understand ourselves as servants of Krishna, then we can be selfish about everything, because it's only in relation to Krishna. That's the proper approach. So the self has to be satisfied. So this religious idea that we get, and we have it in ISKCON as we have in every religion, that we can't talk about the self, we can't, you know, talk about our desires, etc. Well, whose desires are you going to talk about? Krishna's desires. But our desires and Krishna's desires have to match up. We have to talk about our desire. We can't avoid the point. The Bhagavad Gita is all about desire. We find that every single thing we do in life is motivated by the desire to be happy. If anyone tells you something else, they're telling lies. That's just a simple truth. Every single thing we do is motivated by the desire to be happy on a personal level. It's not motivated by the desire to make Krishna happy. It's motivated by the desire to make ourselves happy. So this text addresses exactly that point. And if we don't understand Krishna as a person, we can't address ourselves. So Prabhupada's point is that these material scientists, these Mayavadis, these Advaitins, they're misleading people. They're actually creating a world in which they can't be happy. And from Prabhupada's perspective, this is cruelty. This is actually very cruel to mislead people intellectually and spiritually in that way. So Prabhupada does everything in his power, sets up all kinds of programs that we come to the temple and we see gorgeous deity worship, so we become attracted to the person of Krishna. Because if we don't, we can't be happy. And we won't understand the simple point that unless Krishna is happy, I won't be happy. That's the reason why we'll serve Krishna. That's the reason why our spiritual life will begin, because of purely selfish motivation. But that selfish motivation is spiritual. So all the efforts we make to be happy, you know, we come to the temple to be happy, and we buy a big car to be happy, and we get a nice job to be happy, and we have an iPod to be happy. An iPod, an iPad, an iPhone. I. The chief rabbi in England said that one time. Very good statement. But it doesn't matter that it's about I, if it's in connection with Krishna. But we have to understand that simple truth, that unless there's some idea of us being happy, we're not going to do it, or we're not going to sustain it. We'll start doing it, but we won't keep it up. So we can practice our spiritual life and chant, and if there's no satisfaction in it, we won't keep it up. After 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you see devotees dropping off. Why? Because they're not happy. It's the only reason. If someone's happy, they're not going to give up. They're going to want more and more and more. It's just common sense. So we have to take that seriously. It's a simple thing. So desire is essential to getting in contact with our desire and get our desires out on the table. And when you get them out on the table, it's a frightening prospect. You look at it and you go, oh, do I really? Oh my God. I didn't know I wanted that. I have to do something about that. Because we think, you know, murderers and pedophiles and rapists and liars and cheats, we think that that's all someone else. The desire is within us. If we desire material things enough, we'll do all those things. That's why Krishnadas Kaviraj says, he says, I'm like a worm in the stool. That's the kind of person I am. A worm in the stool, that's really low. So why does he say he's so low? Because in this material world, we are capable of anything to be happy. Given the right circumstances, someone annoys us enough and we'll push them and they'll hit their head and they'll die. And that anger that came from us comes from our frustration because our desire wasn't satisfied. Some young person, we'll take advantage of them to satisfy our desire. We'll tell people lies so that we can get something to satisfy our desire without thought for anybody else. We're all capable of this. We know it. So when we get our desires out on the table, the whole Sankirtan process is to bring these desires up and then deal with them. As we start to chant, then these things come up and we wonder sometimes, am I becoming a more horrible person by chanting? It's just, what's going on? You know, I never thought like this before I joined. I should become a Christian again or an atheist or whatever it is we were. But that's not what's happening. We've lit a fire underneath a pot of ghee and the impurities are coming to the top. So it's not that you put the butter in the pot and all the impurities come up and you say, oh, this is horrible, throw it out. No, it's a process. You take off the impurities and more come up, you take off the impurities and more, and you're left with pure golden ghee. But there's a process of purification that we have to go through. And we have to face all our desires. They bubble up from our heart. And when it breaks the surface, it smells really bad. And we're kind of like, wow, I never thought like that before. That's horrible. That's not me. Well, it's actually true. It's not us. It's a material concept. But we do have to deal with it. We do have to come to terms with the fact that materially, we're not nice people. Materially, no one is a nice person. There are no ladies and gentlemen in this material world. That's not why we come here. We don't come here to be kind to others. We come here to get stuff from other people. We try to do it as nicely as possible, but if they don't listen, we're willing to use our fists. Do you ever know what was the thing, the yippies? After the hippies, there was a little craze called the yippies, and they did all kinds of crazy things, kind of positive action. So they went into the New York Stock Exchange, and they got up on the balcony, and they threw down $200 of $1 bills. Right, just $200. The guys are down there trading in millions and billions. Okay, so they get $200 and go fluff like this. Hey, come and get your money, come and get your money. And the whole trading of the New York Stock Exchange stops. They stop trading in millions to get a dollar. Right, they just did it to make a point, but very well made point. If you're greedy, you'll do anything. People pushing each other out of the way and, you know, just to get a dollar. Crazy guys. But that's the nature of desire. Material desire, Prabhupada always translates kama in the Gita as, when it's material desire, as lust. Spiritual desire, bhakti. It's the same desire, it's just directed in a different way. So we have to just look at where our desires are at. We have desire for Krishna? Yes. We have desire for Guru? Yes. We have the desire to please the devotees? Oh, yes, yes, yes. We have the desire for this? Oh, yes. And we realize we're mixed. We're Prakrita Bhakta. We have a big array of desires. Now we have to consciously start to work more on these desires, give more energy, more food, more sustenance, nourish these desires, and let these desires die. So, and consciously do it. And that's what, like, there's a couple entering the Grihastha Ashram today. That's what the Grihastha Ashram is about. It's about understanding that we're going to do this for Krishna, but there are some material desires. So you have to regulate them. Just put them into a context. You marry a person, and you just marry one person for life. That's it. Keep it really simple. There's no other issue. And you know the way to have a long marriage? The secret of a long marriage? To be a brahmachari? Well, that's the secret for no marriage. Secret for a long marriage is no divorce. No divorce. It's the only secret for a long marriage. Unfortunately, the greatest cause of divorce is marriage. Just a fact. But the secret for a long marriage is no divorce. So if you restrict yourself, you understand the nature of your desire. What's the nature of your desire? How desire works, I mean, again, the Gita says it in 262, 63, the contemplation of the objects of the senses. So when you're young, you're having your lunch in the park, and some beautiful girl passes by, a very handsome boy. The next day you find yourself at exactly the same time in exactly the same spot with your lunch, just waiting. It's nearly an unconscious, it's nearly an automatic thing. Your body practically brought you there. It's not even conscious. But that morning you were doing yourself up, you know, parting your hair, stuff. You know, just in the contemplation, in the just maybe in the off chance. These desires are so deep-seated, they run on automatic. We've cultivated them for many lifetimes. And now we're calling a halt. Well, you can't call a halt so easily. You need to regulate them. Bring them down slowly. So you're driving a car at 70 miles an hour or 70 kilometers an hour. You don't put your foot on the brake and stop. You go down in the gears from fifth gear to fourth gear to third gear to second gear to first gear, and then come to a stop, step out of the car, you're out. If you do it the other way, you're definitely out of the car, but you're in a car crash. Yeah, it's just slam. And you haven't stopped the car properly. You have to go back and start the car properly when you get out of hospital. You know, some people take the spiritual life and the next morning, shaven head, saffron robes, you know, and it's just from 1 minute to the next. I mean, that's what I did. I shaved my head the next day. I had a shaven head. You know, all of a sudden you're a pure devotee from one day to the next. That's just not how it works. And very, very quickly we understand that's not how it works. But because everyone else thinks that, you know, you look like one, therefore you are, we spend many years sometimes in Krishna consciousness pretending we're someone we're not, hoping that no one notices, otherwise they'll kick me out. But you know, when we're by ourselves, we know exactly who we are. And it's just embarrassing, and it gets more embarrassing, so we put on more of an artificial image, and we walk around, and oh, it's a disaster. It's terrible, because we don't know how to grapple with all these things. We have to go through a process. So if you get married, we think, oh, marriage, yeah, you get the girl, you get the boy. Oh, it's going to be fun. Just us together, pull up the duvet. The world doesn't exist. And then you have a baby. And then you have another one. And you quickly realize that if you're a partner in a marriage, you have to sacrifice an awful lot for your partner. What to speak of children. All of a sudden, marriage isn't about us anymore. It's about the other things. And then it becomes part of your spiritual life. So it's very interesting how, if we regulate ourselves, that everything we do starts to veer towards the spiritual. It all becomes a part of the spiritual life. It becomes a metaphor for the spiritual life. It more and more we can't escape from it. So that's why Prabhupada is constantly in these texts coming up with these points, and it seems like he's repeating them. So why is he making this point again? Why does he make it here, etc.? This is why he's making the point. In actual fact, the word in the first verse, Parampuman, means the Supreme Brahman. Prabhupada translates it as the personality of Godhead. He does that constantly. Everywhere you see Paramatma in the text, Prabhupada translates it as the personality of Godhead. He's trying to help us understand that this is the point. This is the point to meditate on. Don't get deviated into these lesser understandings. Understand who God is and who we are. If you understand those, you've got it. I have a simple mantra in life. Keeps me straight. Krishna's God. Prabhupada's the boss. That's it. Everything else is open to negotiation. I'm not as interested in everything else. But if I just keep Krishna's God, Prabhupada's the boss, I understand everything in perspective. And that means I can go anywhere in the world. I can go and meet all kinds of religious people and academics, and I can exist in Oxford where there are some of the biggest atheists on the planet, the most popular atheists, and I've been on television with them. I don't have a problem, because Prabhupada's the boss. So anyone can come with their conclusion, and these guys have very interesting conclusions. They're very intelligent, way beyond my capacity. But I just bring it back to Prabhupada, and within that keeps me straight. I have an acharya. Thank you very much. I don't need you. You're a brilliant guru for what you are, but Prabhupada actually acted properly in his life. His life is an example of how to be good, how to be spiritual, how to be Krishna conscious. And I look at their lives, and I'm just not equally impressed. So I have an acharya, I'm clear. Prabhupada's the boss. And we have to decide on that in life. We can't be just pulled about from here to there. Every new book we read, another truth. Well, because that's how it is. Every new book is just another truth. So we have to decide, where is the source of truth? It's Krishna. Who represents Krishna? Prabhupada. Are there others that represent Krishna? Absolutely. Do they do it as well as Prabhupada? Not in my experience. I haven't seen a single person represent Krishna as Prabhupada has done. I suppose the most impressive statement that Prabhupada made was in a lecture in Vrindavan, these famous Nectar of Devotion lectures. And he was talking about Suridam Sarvabhutanam, that Krishna is the friend of all living entities. And he said, you may think I'm your friend, but I am not your friend. And all the devotees were kind of, who are you, my enemy? And he said, no, Krishna is your friend. Krishna will be there at the time of death. I may not be there. Krishna is your friend. That's such an honest statement. I mean, Prabhupada had every reason to say, I am your friend, to his disciples. That would seem like the natural statement to make. But he was disarmingly truthful. He told the truth to that kind of degree of fault, practically, so that we would understand the truth. That's extremely honest. So he only presented Krishna. He didn't present himself, didn't put himself in front of Krishna in any way. And that's a very, very important part of his mission. There was one time in the 1980s when devotees in America made a Murti of Prabhupada and put a crown on his head and, you know, ermine robes and, you know, the king's things and all that kind of stuff. And it was just just too weird. That wasn't Prabhupada. That wasn't his position. You know, what we have to celebrate is his humility, his Vaishnavism, not his Kshatriya Dharma. He wasn't a Kshatriya. He never claimed to be a Kshatriya. He was a servant of Krishna, simple. And if we can keep that focus, then it doesn't detract from his message, pure bhakti. So, anyway, there's some thoughts. Has anyone got any other thoughts? Was it a premature question? Okay, so you were just warning us that there will be a question. I don't, it's okay. Think about it. Has anyone else got any questions or comments or burning issues? I'm inclined to question the question. You're asking me either or. I don't think it's an either or situation. I remember years ago when I was a young devotee, I was at a class and someone asked, a senior devotee was giving class, and asked him, he said, how come we can't get the association of Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami? I have to travel with these devotees in a Sankirtan van. And, you know, they weren't Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, was his point. And the devotee giving the class said, Krishna's given you the association you need. So we have the association we need. We have the people that we have to work out things with. So every relationship we're in, if we were with Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, we wouldn't last 5 minutes. We'd last 2 minutes maximum before he'd give us an instruction that we actually couldn't comprehend or follow. On the famous story of the married couple who came for blessings. So his blessing was they separate. that's Gaur Kishore Das Babaji for you. So, you know, would I associate with him? My wife wouldn't let me. You know, so we get what association we can by Krishna's grace. We cry out for association and Krishna gives us whatever association is available. And we do our best with that. I remember as a young devotee, when I first came to the temple, I thought devotees kind of floated along the ground. You know, I just had, everything was just mystical and magical and everyone was a little Prabhupada. Everyone who spoke to me was speaking Prabhupada. It was just, you know, everyone was just a pure devotee. And then after about a week, you begin to discern, no, he's an idiot. You know? And you just realize that there's all kinds of things going on here. And then, you know, we start to become offensive and weird. You know, it's just, we think ourselves superior and all that kind of stuff. But there is a little brief period where we're acting properly, actually. And it's very funny of what our mood in the first week, we spend the rest of our spiritual life trying to attain again. You know, except truly and honestly. So we don't have to strive for advanced association. The essence of Krishna consciousness is Sangha. In this Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya says the most important thing is association of devotees. Now, we would have thought he would have said chanting of the holy name, but he doesn't. He says the association of devotees. So we just grab onto the feet of any devotee, and we learn to appreciate every devotee. And that's the difficulty. And so to know that I have to learn to appreciate every devotee. Someone's leading a kirtan and they can't sing. Someone's playing the mridanga and it doesn't really work. You know, and at the back in our mind we're thinking, I remember going to Vrindavan one time, I just arrived, I got up for Mangalarti, went to Mangalarti, and it's Vrindavan just kind of intensifies everything a little bit. But there I was at Mangalarti and I was just criticizing everything. My mind was in overdrive. You know, I was someone just pulled the curtain and showed me myself, you know. And I was just, he was leading the kirtan too fast, he wasn't playing the kartals properly, he was playing the kartals too loud, the pujaris aren't quite in sync, you know, it's not synchronized enough. And, you know, I don't know. And I was just watching my mind doing all this. And I was appalled, kind of, here I am in Vrindavan, this is the best I can do. You know, what a neophyte consciousness. You know, look at him, they don't, look at them, look at me, you know. It's just so weird. And then realizing that my job is to appreciate the sincere motivation of all of these devotees that I've just criticized. I've just dismissed as nonsense people. You know, just to get out of my way so I can get up to the altar so Krishna can see me. You know, I've arrived. And we do that every morning in front of the deities. We don't have to go to Vrindavan to do it. I do it every single morning. If I examine myself honestly, therefore I know what I need in association. I need to learn how to serve. And that, it doesn't matter how advanced. If anyone has come to Krishna consciousness, there is some sincerity. There is some sincere desire. We find that sincerity and we worship it. And we serve that and serve that person. And, you know, that will encourage them in their Krishna consciousness. You know, by giving us value as being devotees, we want to become devotees. That's how we help each other. So we don't have to serve for advanced association. We have it. It's all around us. Everyone's advanced, even if it's only a tiny little bit of sincere desire. That's advanced. And who are we to say what's advanced? Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, there's a reason why we're not associating with them. It's because we can't handle their association. We're not at that level. We didn't get born at that time to associate with Lord Chaitanya for a reason. We're being given an opportunity to begin our spiritual life. Now, here, this is exactly the right time. These are exactly the right people. If we can't do it now, when? Tomorrow? Now you're beginning to sound Irish. You know, there's nothing so important that it can't wait till tomorrow in Ireland. And in the meantime, we can drink. No, now is the time to begin our spiritual life. And any time we think it's time to put it off, no, it's now. So we can always practice spiritual life anywhere. I hope that... Is that an answer? Mm-hmm. So we get what we need. So if we can work it out together, we can advance together. And it's just, interestingly, if you develop good relationships in spiritual life that based around Krishna consciousness, we can be happy together. We can be jolly. You know, when you come to spiritual life and everyone has got the long face, you know, I have to follow the four regular principles. When you come to spiritual life, you have to follow four regular principles. There was a TV show in America one time, and it was just a little snippets of something, and the TV presenter asked one devotee, how do you feel when you chant Hare Krishna? And the devotee was there, he said, I feel joy, I feel ecstasy. He looked like he was suffering so much. And it was just words, you know, it was just, these are the proper words, you know. And he was trying to remember them because he didn't feel any of those things. And, you know, if you come to a temple, you feel the atmosphere, you feel the devotion. But you also have to feel a little ananda, a little joy. There has to be some joy among the devotees. You know, and that comes from relationships. It comes from relationship with Krishna, obviously. We give our devotion, and that the relationship creates this lovely atmosphere. But then the relationship among ourselves. People see the smiles in the corridor, the visitors that come. They see people smiling at each other, winking at each other. There's a little special relationship among the devotees. They're willing to forgive each other. They're willing to be friends with each other. That being friends means you give something. You constantly give. You understand that someone has some difficulty, so you allow for it rather than criticize it. And that atmosphere, that's unusual. That's not what you get in the material world. You know, when I was on book distribution, the way we stopped people on the street was smiling. I just had a smile. My muscles were elastic after a while because you're smiling so much. So you get out on the street, and I started to do it for me, and just then I began to notice the effect it had on others. So I went out because, you know, someone said to me one time, if your face smiles, your mind and your face are connected, and there was some crazy thing, I don't know where that came from. But anyway, I tried to use it because I was so desperate, because Sankirtan on the street is tough, you know. So you go out, and the first 5 minutes are like hell. It could be the first hour, it could be the whole day could be hell if you don't get it right. So you're out at 9 o'clock in the morning, you're standing there, and the first thing I do, I just look down the ground and smile. And look up and says, hello, to the very first person I met, right? And I tried to remember my little mantra, are you from Dublin? Or are you from somewhere else, you know? And sometimes the words wouldn't come out properly, and I just continued to smile, and they'd walk past going, yeah. And you just continue smiling. But after a while, it got to the stage, because I was there for quite some time, people used to give directions. They'd say, and when you go to that building, and then take a right past the smiling Hare Krishna. So the smiling Hare Krishna was like a landmark, you know. And as you go, and people would just start to smile as they walk down the street because they see you. I mean, do it as an experiment. Just anyone do it as an experiment. When you're on the street the next time, just smile. Look at someone and smile. And just see what their reaction is. They'll always smile. They can't help it. No. Yeah, you don't have to wave. Just smile. It's purely facial. Little twinkle in the eye. You know, and people will smile back. People want ananda so much. And they don't get it. People walk down the... Prabhupada saw a photograph, some devotee joined, she was a model. And he saw a photograph of her as a devotee and as a model. The devotee was saying, she's a great model or something on Vogue or something like that. And as a model, of course, she had to look like cool. So she was, you know, or whatever it is, you know. But as a devotee, she's kind of like... And Prabhupada said, oh, as a devotee, she looks so happy. She looks so sad here. But we settle sad. Sad is what, you know, the norm. You notice teenagers today. You know, they make a great virtue of being really sad looking. You know, kind of, no emotion. Nothing, I'm so cool, nothing, yeah. You know, and they don't smile. To get people to smile, to laugh, that's extraordinary. So to be jolly is important in Krishna consciousness. We should go around tickling each other. It's very important. Started a new craze in Krishna consciousness. Sandhya Mangalarti, someone comes up behind you and tickles you, you know. Okay, I think that's it. Time to end now. Oh, your question. Okay, it has to be a quick question. We're supposed to. Yeah, it's a good question. Prabhupada says here that he's the father. That's the reverential type. So it's a broad idea. There's five rasas. So, you know, jumping up to the Madhurya rasa is not where we go. The Madhurya rasa is way beyond our capacity. If we don't get the reverential thing, we're not going to get the Madhurya. So we have to practice. So we have to at least understand who Krishna is. Number one, that there is a Krishna, that there is a God. That's a struggle, you know. And it's a question that I ask many devotees when we do retreats. One of the first questions is, do you actually believe in God? Do you lead a life that looks like it's a life led by someone who believes in God? And often we don't. So, you know, to get the basics right, you know, to get up to the level where the gopis, they love Krishna so much, they don't care. But we're not at the stage of love. We're hardly at the stage of recognition. So Prabhupada's point here is a point made to someone who doesn't even recognize God. That's what his purport is saying. He's saying you have to recognize God. Life comes from life. Life comes from Krishna. These are simplistic points philosophically. But he's making them because he's assuming correctly that we don't understand this point. And that's considering that some of us come from a pious background, but some of us don't come from a background with any piety. So to understand that point is very important. So to approach Krishna with reverence is actually appropriate for us. That's the level that we should practice at for now. And in actual fact, the puja done to our deities is done in the mood of reverence. It's not done in the mood of Madhurya. So if you go to Vrindavan, some temples at some times will exhibit a different form of mood, but it's not even all the time. So you walk in, you know, you go into a temple and the priest looks and he gets very happy to see you and he puts a sweet in front of the deity, pulls the curtain, pulls it back, it's offered. You know, that doesn't happen here. We can't afford to be so relaxed, you know. So in the heart of the devotee, that can all be possible. But in terms of the formal worship of the deity, there's a formality. So it's done in Lakshmi Narayan kind of worship. Yeah, I don't see a duality personally. Prabhupada had his understanding, whether, you know, when you say he was in the Madhurya Ras, I can't talk about such things, I must admit. I just know that Prabhupada is the boss. He's the man. That'll do for me. But, you know, Prabhupada taught us to practice in this way. Therefore, I practice in this way. How my heart feels towards Krishna, that's different. So, you know, sometimes I feel really annoyed with Krishna. You know, he puts me into a situation that's like, oh, for God, oh, come on, you must be mad. You know, why? You know, and that comes from the heart. So that's not regulated by awe and reverence and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes you just feel ecstatic in the middle of a kirtan and you just forget your body and everything and you're just thrilled to bits to dance for Krishna and that's it. And that's not regulated by awe and reverence. That just comes out naturally. That's just a natural thing. But in terms of society, there has to be convention. So that convention is this is how you approach God. So what happens in the convention and what happens in the quiet of our heart, that's individual. So in the quiet of Prabhupada's heart, he kept that very private. He didn't talk about it. And he exhibited it very, 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 very rarely. Sometimes he had some ecstatic experience of crying and things like that. They were very, very rare instances. He controlled that very, very deeply. And that is the general convention among devotees. You don't give your heart like that. So we just, in terms of our convention, we keep it really simple and we stick to these ways of conducting ourselves because it keeps it easy. If someone starts rolling around on the ground, it's my eyes start rolling in my head. It's like, oh, God. I'm not impressed, you know. I'm more impressed if they contain themselves, do the rolling at home. Okay. Krishna, Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki. Thank you.